Michigan lost a hero last week. Deet Emmon of Grand Rapids died at age 99. You may not know her name, but during World War II, Deet, her fiancé, and a small circle of friends saved 60 Dutch Jews from being deported to Nazi death camps. Deet survived being in the Dutch resistance, she survived the war, and she eventually made her way to West Michigan. She told her story in a 1994 memoir, Things We Couldn't Say, co-authored with James Skop, and he is here with us now. Jim, welcome, and I want to start by asking you, what adjectives, what words best describe Deet?
Oh, boy, that's a good one. Let's, almost the first thing that pops into my mind is the word fierce. She had a personality that was powerful. And by fierce, I don't mean any negative connotations whatsoever. Just simply take a hold of life and do what she used to. I don't know how many times she didn't tell me. Way back when, when I was a little girl, people said, "What are you going to be, Deet?" And she said, "I don't know what I'm going to be, but I hope it isn't boring." And she took life with that kind of ferocity.
That's a good one. Well, I know she was born in The Hague in 1920. So she was a very young woman when Nazi Germany seized the Netherlands, and that was in 1940. Tell us why and when she and her fiancé and a group of friends began sheltering Jewish people as the Nazis closed in. I mean, it began with a co-worker named Herman, didn't it?
Yes, it began with someone who worked in the bank there with named Herman. But it actually sort of began before that. She would be very happy to say she did. She told me frequently that it was really her boyfriend, her fiancé, Hein, who started examining what was going on all around her and saying, in light of my reading of this book called Mein Kampf, I don't like it. It's not good. Something bad is happening here. And that resolution worked into her, worked through them, so that they started working with the resistance in the underground. At that point, of course, already the machinations of Hitler's occupying force was beginning to create laws and, difficult sort of things for the Jewish people, especially in the city. They couldn't shop in this block. They couldn't sit in this park. And then they had to wear the yellow star. And it got to a point with her, with both of them, that they began to understand that what was going on all around them was flat out not right. And here's where that ferocity, the characteristic, I think, that was in her, just simply said, we have to act. We have to act. We have to do something because we just can't tolerate the injustice that's going on here.
And as then transports began and Jews were being ordered to leave their homes and head east, and we know now to be sent to death camps like Auschwitz or Sobibor, tell us how, with Herman, it began with him and it ultimately spread to 60 people. How did they go about hiding and supporting these people?
What happened to begin was that she determined when Herman said to her, well, here is my summons, so to speak. I have to go to this park and I can pack just one little suitcase and that's it. And that's all we're told as Jews. What can I do? And she said, well, listen, I think I know a whole bunch of farmers up in rural Holland who would be happy to just hide you for a while. This is at the very beginning, of course, of these kind of actions. But Hein, her fiancé, had grown up in rural Holland, in northern Holland, in Friesland. And she thought that he could help not only Herman, but others to find places with people who would be glad to harbor them. They really believed, she said this over and over, they really believed that the war would be over in just a little while. It never dawned on them that some people would actually have visitors in the home and hiding for four long years. But then, of course, getting them there was one thing. Keeping them fed was another. And it was absolutely important for them to get ration cards. And the ration cards could only be in government offices. But since food was slowly throughout those 4 years getting more and more scarce, they simply had to get ration cards in order to keep both family and the hidden Jews healthy.
Amazing. You stop and you think of the risk that they were courting, I think it's beyond the comprehension of most of us. What did she tell you about that risk and how she dealt with it?
Wow. She would say, she honestly would say, we had no choice. Now, people did have choice, of course, but we had no choice because what we saw, and always, you know, with that editorial we, and she meant not only myself and Hein, but also their whole group and all of the people who were working in resistance and underground, we had no choice because it was clear that what was happening was evil. And if you don't stand up to evil, you're really not alive. And she, you know, that's the way she talked about it. And that's in part why she didn't even want a book written about her life, because all these others in the group, all these others in the underground of the resistance, there were so many who did the same thing. And she did not want to be singled out for, well, I suppose for some of the accolades we're giving her right now.
Indeed. And we know through your book and through articles written about Diet that she and Hein paid a price. They were found, sent to concentration camps, and he died in Dachau?
Yes, ma'am. He died in, what was it, January, I believe, 1945? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Diet Emmon shared her story with an audience at Blythefield Hills Baptist Church in West Michigan back in 2012. Here she is talking about a letter that her fiancé Hein was able to write and get to her shortly after he was arrested.
Anyway, the letter said that he didn't know what would happen. And even if we don't see each other here on earth again, we will never be sorry for what we did. And that is what makes me so happy.
And she got out alive. How did that happen?
Well, she would call it one of the biggest miracles of all. She determined early on, as she was in the camp at Vught. In Holland, there was only two legitimate sort of concentration camps. One was a place called Vught, and that's where she was. She determined when she got there that she needed some plan to try to figure out how in the world she would ever get out of this whole business. So she determined that she would take on a sort of false identity. They knew her by her, by another name, not by her name. That would have been more dangerous for her. But she decided to take on the character of a person with, how can I say this, diminished intelligence. So that if she played this person who seemed incapable of doing the kinds of things essentially that the resistance had to do, they would simply understand immediately that she was not going to be a problem for them and release her. And that's ultimately what happened. She played the fool and she beat him.
Did everyone they hid survive the war?
All of the Jewish folks who they hid survived the war. I remember her telling me, and they all survived, Jim. They all survived. Not Hein, but they all, the people we hid all survived.
What brought her to Michigan, and when was that? What did she do here?
After the war, she, like a lot of people who were in occupied Holland for 4 years and who were also part of the underground movement, decided that they had to start all over. And that was very true for her. She determined that the only way for me to go on is to erase the past. So she went and got a degree as a nurse. And then in addition to that, she determined that to get out of the Netherlands itself, she would hire on with Shell Oil, who had refining places all over the world. And she ended up in Venezuela. And there she met a man and married him. As it turned out, that wasn't a particularly successful marriage. But together they moved to New York City. And in New York City, she needed to get away from him completely. She looked up in the phone book for churches, and she found a church called the Christian Reform Church of Manhattan or downtown New York City. And she recognized that from her own Dutch past. You have a lot of people in Michigan who are Christian Reformed also. And she just thought immediately, well, they'll hide me. So in order to escape an abusive relationship, she took her two kids to this little downtown Christian Reformed church in New York. But there was a cousin or a second cousin or something who lived in Grand Rapids. So in order to take those two kids out of that environment, she ended up in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
And then live quietly. But then she finally was ready to tell her story, which she did, co-authored with your book, Things We Couldn't Say. And then recognition followed. Briefly, just remind us of the recognition she received from Israel and from the Netherlands.
Well, she received, you know, a lot of accolades at the time. I think the thing that was probably most important to her was the recognition from the State of Israel for Yad Vashem, that she became one of the righteous Gentiles and has a tree planted in her name at that memorial place. And that was really important to her.
Yeah, and I know when the King of the Netherlands visited West Michigan, she was honored.
Oh, yeah. When the King visited West Michigan, now, some of us would say Dietz in heaven right now, but she was really close to heaven when the King visited, because she retained, during her American years, she retained that fierce loyalty to the royalty in Holland. So when the King came, and people sent me the picture that was on the front of the Grand Rapids Press of the King holding her hand as they went into the Meyer Gardens, I thought, wow, I can't imagine that she could ever be more thrilled than the fact that the King took her there. That was just wonderful.
Jim, what can all of us learn from what Diet Emmen and her fiancé, Hein, and those friends did nearly 80 years ago?
And what drew me to the story itself was that you actually have something like of a love story against a backdrop of war. And those two elements together are just incredible. So I, you know, her moral witness is the great shining light of her life. To the extent that we can ourselves get anywhere near that, her story benefits all of us.
Jim Skop, who co-authored along with Diet Emmen her memoir from 1994, Things We Couldn't Say. Diet Emmen died last week at the age of 99. Thank you so much for sharing her story with us and talking with us.
Well, thank you for sharing her story. I really appreciate your interest.